Phil Apter has been in the pro wrestling business for over 50 years.
Hey, talking here with Arn Anderson. Arn, first of all, your height and weight.
6'1", 255.
And now subscribers to VOC Nation Premium get exclusive access to Phil Apter's archived audio footage.
And where's your hometown?
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay, and give us something about your back. First of all, your relationship to Ole Anderson.
Ole is my...
Subscription to VOC Nation Premium starts at just $3 a month and includes commercial-free audio and video versions of our top podcasts.
Okay, we're speaking here with the manager of the World Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, Tarzan Tyler and Luke Ram, and he's sort of glowing tonight about a new prospect we haven't heard of yet.
And for just $9 a month, Apter's archives are all yours.
Would you tell us who this new prospect
is?
Well,
I'll tell you, Bill, I've searched the world, and I finally found the true world champion. I finally found...
What's your opinion of Ivan Koloff winning the title from Bruno Sammartino?
Well, I think... I don't know what to say, but I want to say one thing. Bruno was a hell of a champion. You know?
Hear exclusive interviews with the greatest performers of all time.
This is Phil Apter, and once again, we're speaking here with... Bruno Sammartino. Bruno, first of all, how did you and Bruiser lose that title to the Valiants?
Well, actually, it was a very unusual loss, if you want to call it.
Did Heenan have anything to do with this?
Well, yes, but the whole thing is this, that the rules, as I always understood them, was that the title could only be lost by pin or submission, which is the same rules as my title, the World Wrestling Federation. That night, it was...
To sign up, it's very simple. Head to premium.vocnation.com or go to patreon.com/vocnation. VOC Nation takes you behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history. Wrestling with history worldwide in the VOC Nation Wrestling Network. Voice of Choice Bruce Wirt, Killer Ken Resnick, and Wonderful Willie, the legend maker, Phil Apter. And what's he doing? What's he doing right now?
I'm trying to put my cell phone down because some of our listeners here on Wrestling with History are asking me questions about the night we're taping this evening. Some questions to ask all of us.
They're late,
but they're texting me anyway. And I'm saying we're taping the podcast right now.
Taping the podcast. We tape on Tuesdays. But if you're listening, we tape on Tuesdays. Don't text Bill on Tuesdays.
Stop texting me. This one is from Wrestling Inc.'s Nick Houseman here. Yes. So
good plug to Wrestling.
Shout out to Nick Houseman.
There we go. All right, guys. Tonight, we're talking about Bobby the Brain Heenan, who had a pivotal role for so much of our wrestling history. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But last week, we talked about one of Bobby's most famous clients, Andre the Giant. And I have some feedback from that show if we want to start with that. What do you think?
Yeah.
We want to hear Andre.
Without the fans, we're nothing. So start with that.
The real Godzilla. If anyone in wrestling history deserves the phrase larger than life, it's Andre. If you started watching wrestling in the late 80s, early 90s, like myself, well, him, Andre was just a washed up, immobile giant. But if you dig into his early career in the 70s and early 80s, you'll discover an amazing once in a lifetime individual who could only be the product of the wonderful territory era. And we kind of talked about that last week, Bill. You ended with that, didn't you?
We did. Yes, that's correct. You know, he worked all the territories, Andre the Giant, booked out by Vince McMahon Sr. And Andre was the that special eighth wonder of the world, where he would compete in battle royals. He would compete against the local champions. And yeah, everybody wanted to see and meet, if they could, Andre the Giant.
So you guys, Bill, you're probably more in tune than Ken with this individual, but what's your thoughts on Dave Meltzer?
What does that have to do with Andre?
I'll tell you in a second. I'm going to read.
No, Andre, Dave and I have been, back in the days when you were not supposed to talk to Dave Meltzer or know him. I talked to Dave all the time. He and I used to talk at least once a week and exchange results and things. And I've known Dave, I've been comped the Wrestling Observer. Dave has always been a confidant and a friend. I don't always agree with all his views, but that doesn't make a bad person, in my opinion.
Yes, listen, Dave's a pariah. He's like Bruce Pritchard. Some people love him, some people don't love him. Ken, any thoughts on Meltzer?
I did one interview with him, didn't have all that much contact, and it was kind of one of those things where I had no problem with him, but sometimes other people in the business, which I always found strange, would sometimes say, "Hey, what are you doing talking to Dave Meltzer?"
Yeah.
And it's like, well, the only way you would know that was if you're reading him. Yeah. I always found that, you know, a little strange. But, you know, I am starting to take notice. You know, I tabbed him and we refer to Bill Bruce as a legend maker. But how many times has Bill said, well, he wasn't supposed to go to, you know, WWE or WWF matches, but he would go, and he wasn't supposed to talk to Vince, but he would talk to Vince. And now he wasn't supposed to talk to Dave Meltzer, but he's friends. I think we got to, you know, relook at this. We might have to start calling him the rule breaker.
The rule breaker.
Well, you know what it was?
What
this was Dave Meltzer. People a lot of times say after a Meltzer. And we did two different kinds of journalism.
Different style.
And Dave Meltzer is a legitimate journalist. He really is. He worked in the newspapers out in California and stuff. But if a promoter heard that you were talking to him, their thing was that SOB is exposing our business. And back then, again, the business was, wrestling is real, period, the end. And, you know, you don't let anyone in on the secrets, et cetera. So, but a lot of people at this point have some issues with Dave. I read The Observer, I read what he says, and a lot of the news that he reports, a lot of it I don't know until I read it in The Observer as well. I visit his site daily.
So I am...
Bill and Bruce, as we get into more Voc Nation t-shirts, I think I got a perfect idea for Bill's. We can have Bill's picture and the caption can be, "I wasn't supposed to, but..."
But I did.
I love it.
I like that. Will it fit on my custom-made GOC Nation hat?
That's the new caption. I wasn't supposed to, but I did.
Now, listen, while we're there, and by the way, if you're watching on video, you're watching on our premium channel, which you're subscribing for just $3 a month. You get full video, commercial-free, of this show, In the Room with Brady Hicks, My Big Break with Jerry Strauss. He's already had Candace Michelle, that, and Shelly Martinez from Shelly Live. You get the full show right there, just $3 a month, audio and video. And the next tier up is $9, and you get Apter's Archives, which is 50 years of Bill Apter. And the first one is up, Bill. It's Bruno Sammartino.
Yes, now this is 50 years of Bill Apter interviewing wrestlers. And I have a huge cassette library, and so much of it has never been heard or utilized at all. And the one that's up currently is, a lot of people don't remember the days when Bruno Sammartino was in the WWA, the territory that Bruiser ran in Detroit, and Bobby Heenan was a big part of that company as
where
well.
Where it started.
Yeah.
Indianapolis and Detroit
in that area. And so Bruno talking about he and Bruiser losing the WWA tag team titles to the Valiant Brothers, managed by Bobby Heenan at that point. So yeah, it's great audio and it's historical. And every once in a while, we will drop more of these classic audio interviews out there. And only on the premium channel at VOC Nation will you be able to access these.
There you go. So I was saying that because Ken's also, so Bill's got his VOC Nation hat on, which will be available soon, as soon as we relaunch the new website. And Ken has his Killer Ken Made It Real t-shirt on, which is available on shirts.vocnation.com in the VOC Nation store on Pro Wrestling Tees. Ken, you're modeling that shirt today. It looks very, very well on you.
Well, I thought about it, and, you know, I generally don't, I've never worn it on the show. I kind of thought it was a little tacky, but I knew, you know, we were going to be talking about Bobby the Brain Heenan, and the Bobby loved picking on people, and not in a bad way, in a good way. I mean, he just lived for that. And as I was thinking about some of the Heenan stories we were going to be telling, I said to myself, if Bobby was still here and part of this show and saw this t-shirt, it would be, he would be like over the moon. That is all he would focus on and pick on me for in every way possible. So I thought nobody would love to see me and this t-shirt together more than Bobby Heenan.
Can you
so
lift it up a little bit?
If he's looking down, I'm wearing this for Bobby because he would love it. He'd be unmerciful.
Can you show the whole shirt? Can you move your camera down so we can see the whole shirt? That's great. Wow, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
you just want to see my COVID stomach.
Well, we know that. that far.
Yeah. The only thing worse, Ken, is if Brady Hicks had his picture on a t-shirt, but we'll skip that. Now getting back to Dave. So, and by the way, my first knowledge of Dave Meltzer way back when I first started doing this, because I wasn't really a dirt sheet guy. I 411 Mania or, you know, sites like that is where I got my news.
You're a clean sheet guy.
Yeah, I'm a clean sheet guy. But I'm at a wrestling convention. I think it was Big Time Wrestling out at Kirk White in California. And Diamond Dallas Page comes up to me, super excited to see me, asks me how I've been doing and, you know, 10 minutes into the conversation, and I'm thinking, I think that he might think I'm somebody else. And I said, Dallas, I'm sorry. I don't think that I'm who you think I am. Who do you think that I am? He's like, you're Meltzer. I said, no. No, but thank you. and that's how I became aware of Dave Meltzer. And my opinion is Dave likes Japanese wrestling a lot. And that's not the style of wrestling that I like. So I'm not in tune with his stars.
Yeah. So what brought up Dave Meltzer with our Barbie?
Yeah, here? I'm like, what are we doing here?
Here's the payoff. Rod Gapley.
No, wait. Before you go on, sometimes you get that glow in your eye and that little smile of I'm going to get you. That, what do you think of Dave Meltzer? Ha ha. And then. So
Rod, and this is, you know, comment on our Andre the Giant show, but I think he's more talking about you two and what you're doing, reminiscing about the past together, right? The golden era. And Rod says, I hope in 30 years, Justin Roberts sits down with Dave Meltzer and they can reminisce about the good old days when the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega would play Call of Duty all night long on a school night.
Okay.
Yeah,
so Bobby Heenan.
Are you as confused as I am?
I just said that's. I think Rod was saying that he wasn't. Yeah. He doesn't think that history will play out quite as well. Like this, looking back now, 50 years ago is a lot more fun than it might be looking back.
All right,
50 years
from
now.
I got what you mean. Ken and I with the golden age of wrestling. So we're talking about 50 years from now, Justin Roberts and Dave Meltzer talking about Hario Kasama Bada wrestling in Japan and the Young Bucks will then at that point be older Bucks.
Question mark says, so a lot of these I can't read. I'm just going through them and too many foul language and swear words. There's never been a more epic event. This is question mark, two words. Has there ever been
a gentleman who passed away? We're not talking about him, question mark. Josef, not the same person. Okay, go ahead.
Has there ever been a more epic event in all of history than a drinking contest between Andre the Giant and Harley Race?
Absolutely. I talked about that last week. I was there.
Yep, you were there?
Yeah.
And that's it. I don't think I'm going to read the rest of these. Let's get in to the late, great Bobby the Brain Heenan, born November 1st, 1944, passed away very sadly, September the 17th, 2017. And the last, oh boy, Bill, Ken, the last 15 years were not great to Bobby Heenan. And I was very thankful that he got that last run in the spotlight for, I think it was WrestleMania 17 for the gimmick Battle Royal. That was his last hurrah, right?
Well, I believe it was. He after that, he did a lot. Yeah, but he did a lot of conventions. His wife.
And I mean, I think back and Bobby was such a phenomenal talker on interviews, on color with Gorilla on primetime. It was like the fact that he got to a point where he couldn't talk was about as cruel as anything I can.
Well, that was similar to like when Gordon Solie had the issue where he had to have his throat surgery and he couldn't speak after that. But I have a story that involves him, but not directly with him being there.
Okay.
Can I tell it to you?
Yeah, go ahead. Fire away.
Mr. Weston, my mentor at the wrestling magazines, when I was being romanced into working for the wrestling magazines, he called me. There's no cell phones. And he said, I'd like to meet you, and we have never met in person. I'd like to meet you at the Men's Grill at the Biltmore Hotel in New York City. So I went, and we met, and he was telling me that I was being too nice to the waiters. Mr. Weston was very great, but he was sarcastic. So he then pulls out a copy of like the 1970, maybe November cover of the Wrestler magazine. And he says, keep it down because I'm not proud of it. We're sitting next to people with suits and ties and all that. And a big headline, oh my God, Bobby, what happened to your face? And there's a bloody, gory picture of Heenan with blood all over his face. And I never forgot the person, the businessman sitting next to us, looked at that and says, oh my God, what is that? And I said, that's Bobby Heenan. Mr. Weston, put it away. He was like, he went, that was the first real look I had at a cover of a Heenan thing. But Heenan had one of the things that he did that was brilliant was that he was a self-publicist. I wish everybody was like him. There were two guys in Detroit, photographers, Gary Kamensack and Gary Mancuso. And Heenan used to get them when he was in WWA in the Detroit area. And Heenan would set them up to take pictures of Heenan and his guys in the dressing rooms and make sure they sent them exclusively to us. And 90% of them were all bloody and gory pictures. And he knew we would use them. So that was smart. The first, So.
And Bobby was in the WWA from 1961 to 1974. And I guess in 69, he started sharing his time with the AWA. And that, I guess, leads me to you, Ken. Yeah. Did you first meet Bobby in the AWA, or was it not until you went to the WWF?
Oh, no. Bobby was, and together with Nick, was in the AWA on my day one. So I got to know Bobby really well, his wife Cindy, daughter, Jessica. I knew them, and Bobby was one, like Nick was, that if there was something, once I kind of had paid a little dues and was accepted, you could go to Bobby and ask him things, and he would take the time away from the camera to try and help you as much as he could. So I knew Bobby the entire 3+ years I was in the AWA. Bobby had already left and was in WWF. So I got together with Bobby again in WWF on my very first day.
Awesome.
So Bill, I was with him in AWA and WWF.
Bill, when was the first time that you met Bobby Heenan?
I went to cover a show in, trying to think where it was, an AWA show. Vern Gagne had told me that, you know, anytime I wanted to come out and shoot pictures, etc. So Bobby never clued me in on something. This was back in, Ken, maybe you might remember this since, and I think it was before you were in AWA, but Vern called me into the dressing room and Bobby was in there with Ray Stevens and Nick Bockwinkel, and they had a trophy. And Vern looked at me and he said, "Do you have a suit?" Because I was wearing a leisure suit back then. I didn't have a shirt and tie on. I said, "This is all I have." And Greg came in, he said, that's acceptable. So what we're going to do is you're going to present. Stop straightening when I'm talking. No, I'm just
sorry. For the people on video.
No, I'm just right. This is why you got to get the video so you'll know what I'm talking about. So Bobby lays out this whole thing that there's a trophy that we're going to give to the Heenan family, a huge trophy to Heenan, Ray Stevens, and Nick Bockwinkel, and referee Al DeRusha would be in there and all this, and just, you know, follow the flow of things. I was smart, sort of, to the business, 20%, okay, at that point. I get in the ring, and whoever the announcer was, I think it was Al DeRusha. He had said to me, Bill Apter is here from the wrestling magazine in New York for a very special presentation. I'm holding the trophy, and then Bobby does his whole thing. You know, all you idiots out there, blah,
humanoids.
Blah, blah. Huh?
Humanoids.
I was going to say hemorrhoids. I couldn't think. So he's all you humanoids and all. And all of a sudden, I hear a referee come behind me. He says, "Get out." I'm going, "What? Get out." I didn't know what he was talking about. And I'm like, "What do you mean, get out?" Because we're on TV here. And all of a sudden, Ray Stevens grabs the trophy and breaks it over the head. And it's on YouTube somewhere. And that all hell broke loose. And I ran out of the ring like, because nobody clued me in. So we got back to the dressing room. Bobby said, "You know what? Had we clued you in, you never would have reacted that way."
Yeah.
Brilliant. You came across great, kid.
Was that Ray's turn?
Yes. Yeah. 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 That's what it was. So that was the first time I had talked to Bobby on the phone several times before that, because he always was calling and saying, you know, "I'm getting your photographers to send you pictures." He was like Jerry Lawler that way. Always calling, always sending pictures to publicize whatever he was doing. Those were the two guys through the years in the magazines that always kept publicizing themselves. Yeah, so it was great. It was great meeting him. And that night, I remember going out to Chinese food with Nick and Bobby. And oh my God, Bobby with the server and everything, putting on, back then when it was acceptable, Chinese accent, and you know, throwing food on the floor. It was just unbelievable.
Take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side with more Bobby Heenan, including some world famous ribs, not the kind that you eat, right here on Wrestling with History in the VOC Nation Wrestling Network. For over 10 years, VOC Nation has taken listeners behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history. Our hosts are not only experts on the business, but have lived in the business. Subscribe and hear weekly podcasts from hosts like legendary pro wrestling journalist Bill Apter, former Impact Wrestling star Wes Briscoe, former WWE and AWA broadcaster Ken Resnick, former WWE and TNA star Shelly Martinez, former WCW star The Maestro, NWA legend The Raging Bull Manny Fernandez, and much more. VOC Nation programming is free on most major podcasting apps, including iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and Radio.com. And video podcast and bonus content is available on Patreon for as low as $3 a month. What are you waiting for? Head to VOCNation.com and dig into the most comprehensive podcast network built for pro wrestling fans. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at VOC Nation Wrestling Network, and follow us on Twitter at VOC Nation.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level the who, what, when, where, and why you are rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Back on Wrestling with History. You know, if we could monetize something here, it should be the breaks, because that's where we have
the most. You know what I want to ask you, though?
Yeah.
What do you think of Wade Keller?
I like Wade Keller.
Okay.
Are you saying because, like, you're trying to paint like I don't like Dave Meltzer. I don't agree with his style of wrestling. His stars are not where I would put my stars.
Okay.
I would give Andre and Hogan 5 stars. Savage Steamboat would probably get 5 as well. But I'm just not into like
Kenny Omega versus somebody.
Yeah, I'm not into the competitive dance, and that's nothing against AEW. I don't want a bunch of hate mail. Don't attack me. I'm very sensitive these days. Ken, let's talk about Bobby Heenan and his ribs, and not the kind
of. Why are we going to talk about Bobby Heenan on the Dave Meltzer show? I don't understand.
We'll call this Wrestling with Wrestling Observer. No. Dave, we love you. Thank you. Yeah, you're I say it all the time. Dave's the reason that a lot of us are doing this today, because he was a founder of the what do you call it? Smart Marks. Ken, Bobby Heenan, ribs. You got any famous rib stories? You spent a lot of time with Bobby.
Bobby loved picking on people, and Bobby lived to pull ribs. And Bobby Heenan got me better than anybody ever could have. And to set it up, it was when I was in WWF, we were in Pittsburgh. And, you know, back in those days, all the interviews were market specific. So sometimes on an interview day, we would have 75 or more interviews. And oftentimes, you know, before I would leave the office, sometimes would fax me a rundown list. But it was always the, you know, agent that, you know, on scene that kind of set up the order of the talent and oversaw the interviews and, you know, made sure everything was right. We get to Pittsburgh. I forget who it was supposed to be, but for whatever reason, you know, he had missed a plane. There was a delay, whatever. He wasn't there. And, you know, I had never needed it, so I had left my rundown of the interviews in my room at the Holiday Inn we were staying at in Pittsburgh. And now we're already downtown at the arena. And I'm trying to think, you know, they're trying to find out if they can get a fax to the building. And I'm trying to think who might still be at the hotel. And I know Bobby was staying there and he wasn't scheduled for later. So I call the hotel, get Bobby, tell him what happened, tell him where the rundown is in my room, call back to the desk, identify myself and say, would you please give Bobby Heenan a key to my room? And Bobby said, I'll get the list and come right down. Well, you know, which he did, but I'm thinking I probably made the biggest mistake in the world. I let Bobby Heenan get into my room when I'm not there. Bobby comes down with a list and I say, all right, just tell me, what did you do to my room? And he looks at me, he says, nothing, come on. He said, you know, this was different. You know, I would love to, but I'm not gonna do it like this. I didn't do anything. And we're doing the interviews, we take a break. I said, come on, Bobby, just tell me, what'd you do? He swears up and down, he didn't do anything. So long story short, we get back to the hotel after the matches. I go to my room. Bobby swears he didn't do anything. You know, I put the card in, open, and I'm like pushing the door open an inch at a time. I don't know if there's something above, an animal, whatever. I finally get the door. I don't see anything. Then I check in the bathroom. I check behind the shower. And it's like, I'm pulling each drawer out an inch at a time. Nothing. Open my suitcase, nothing. I can't find anything. So I go back to the bar, Bobby's there. I said, Bobby, what do you want? It's on me, I want you to buy a drink. And he kind of looks at me. I said, I was sure you did something to my room. He said, I told you, I would not like that. I didn't do anything. So we have a couple drinks. We're leaving early the next morning. I go back to my room. And I take my contacts out, wash up, you know, pull the, and I looked under the bed. I had done everything. So I pull the sheet back, whatever, you know, I climb in bed and I scream, Heenan! At the top of my voice. What he had done was gone to the restaurant and gotten like two or three salt shakers, pulled back the bedding, completely filled all the sheets with white salt and remade the bed. So when I got in, it was like I was just crawling into a bed full of table salt. Oh. And, you know, once you get that on your, you can't get it off. And finally, all I could, you know, there's no way to get it out. So I just had to pull the bedspread back and try to sleep on the top of the bed.
Like sleeping on a bed of sand.
No bed bugs, though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But
that was Bobby. He was like, he knew I would be looking for something. So he found the one thing until the very end I got in bed I would never find. And he made.
Ken, I think we lost Ken.
I think Ken froze. So
Ken froze in about- a very, for people on, I have to do gallery view so people can see the pose that Ken froze on.
But you know, he was telling a story about being assaulted.
Yeah, so yeah, very good. Bobby. That's quick wit.
Well, until we get Ken back, Bobby Heenan and I had a very special line of communication between the two of us from the first time I met him until the last time I saw him when he was ill. Bobby used to love, Bobby knew that I did.
Okay, I'm back, I think.
Oh, okay, we were talking about you being assaulted by Bobby Heenan.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a master, but he swore up and down all night. You know, he didn't do a thing. And it was, you know, he figured out the one place I wouldn't see till, you know, I climbed into bed.
I want to ask you about some of your experience doing interviews with Bobby, because I've seen some outtakes and especially where he's just messing around. And so I want to get to that. Bill, go back to your story that you started when Ken.
So from the day I met Bobby until the last time I saw him at a convention in I think it was in Queens at the big event, not long before he passed away. Bobby knew that I did, from telephone, Bobby knew that I did hundreds of wrestling voices. And he used to always love, he'd always tell me to ask me to do Pedro Morales. So when Bobby and I got together in person, Pedro used to hit his body and go, the interviewer would go, well, Pedro, what do you think about it? I am ready for any kind of action, baby. That's what Pedro would do. So no matter where I ran into Bobby, at a wrestling show when he was around the ring managing one of his guys, and I'd be shooting pictures around the ring, he'd always pass me by, bump into me and do this. When he was being on camera with Tony Schiavone in WCW, the two of them are standing there in front of the camera. I'm behind the camera shooting pictures. Bobby's doing this. Every single time we had that thing. And like I said, the last time I saw him and he could barely talk. And he said, cool. And I thought he was going to knock himself over. He was so weak at that point. But I wanted to bring up the wonderfulness. I'm going to use that old Bill Cosby word, that wonderfulness of Cindy, his wife, who spent so much of her life taking care of him and keeping him out in the business and with the fans, no matter how much he was hurting and how much everything was going wrong with him. I just want to send, if she's listening to this or watching this, want to send our love to her for making Bobby's last years so very happy, bringing him back out into the wrestling public.
Yeah, for me, right, as a fan, I'm not as much of a fan today, but a major fan in the 80s. Seeing Bobby Heenan, even at that stage, it was like, you know, I mean, it was probably equivalent to if I was standing in front of Hulk Hogan, who was my hero as a child. Bobby was just, he had that big of an impact on me. Ken, you spent a ton of time with Bobby doing backstage interviews, and Bobby was part of so many because he had so many people. Bobby, his roster, I mean, if you think about the heels in the mid-80s in the WWF, the major ones really ran either him or Jimmy. Johnny Valiant, I guess, is a close third. Fuji had a few. But Bobby was part of a lot of the interviews. Do you have anything that sticks out in terms of interview memories?
There's a couple, but I will say this and to explain, I mean it in a great way. Bobby was a very hard interview in that he was so good, you could never really let your guard down. Even on a day, if we had to do, say, 100 interviews, because you never knew what Bobby might throw out or Bobby might come back and challenge you on. In other words, like when I would interview Hulk, once Hulk got going, he pretty well carried the interview, you know, as did, you know, the Macho Man. Macho Man would always go out of his way to try and include you, but mainly on rhetorical questions. So you could, if it was a long day, you could kind of relax mentally a little bit, but you never could with Bobby, because he would sometimes come up with stuff. If you weren't paying complete attention, you would have no idea. And to this day, a lot of people have seen the interview, the Road Warriors with the turkey leg with Animal and Hawk, where, you know, you could see me biting my lip to keep from cracking up, as did Animal.
It was like me with Vern's last match, but
yeah. Bobby is the only guy that cracked me up where we had to redo the interview. I started laughing so hard I just couldn't stop. We were doing an interview, it was in the AWA, it was around the holidays. Nick wasn't there, so Bobby was doing the interviews, and you know, we're doing an interview and he's talking about Nick, you know, it's the holidays. You know, he's on a roll, and all of a sudden he just stops and goes, "Oh, geez." And, you know, like took me back. And I didn't know if he was in character, if there was something wrong. So I said, "Well, you know, what's wrong? Is there a problem?" He said, "Did you get a Christmas card from me yet?" And I was like, I didn't know if he was in character. So I just kind of said, "Well, as a matter of fact, I didn't." He goes, "Yeah, and you won't either." And it just out of the clear blue, it just cracked me up.
People could add. That's when ad-libbing was acceptable. You can't do that today.
No, but I mean, it was just the whole life. He was right in the middle of this passionate interview about a match. And he just, "Did you get a Christmas card from me?" Yeah, it just, and you know, it was just, he said, "Yeah, and you won't either." I just cracked up. You know, I was like so invested in paying attention. And I just lost it. I started laughing so hard. We had to redo it. And I said, "Bobby, where did that come from?" He said, "I swear, I don't know. It just popped into my head." And that was Bobby. And I said, "All right, you know, we'll redo it and go ahead." And I says, "No, I'll never get the same reaction. Forget." But that was Bobby. I mean, just out of the clear blue sky, it just popped into his head. So he is the only one that got me to, and not intentionally, but it was just, he thought it would be, you know, funny part of the interview.
Before he was in AWA, we mentioned that he was in WWA, Bruiser's territory, and he was the perfect pain in the butt to Bruiser. Absolutely perfect, because he ran roughshod with the Blackjacks and the Valiants and so many other guys that cost Bruiser so much trouble. And I don't think anyone could have done it better than Bobby Heenan. In the AWA, he and Nick Bockwinkel were perfect together, because Bockwinkel could talk and so could Ray Stevens, but they stood there being more classy, where Heenan was the like we used to use in the magazines, the loudmouth manager. And just, you never, what Ken was saying, and it's so true, is you never knew what Bobby Heenan was going to say. And I do know in his days back in the WWF that even though the guys, the broadcasters had Vince in their earpiece and they were instructed where to go in various places verbally, that they did give Bobby some freedom to be Bobby Heenan, because you can't take a guy like Bobby Heenan, such a great wit like Bobby Heenan, and just put him in a box and say, you can't go out of this box. So, yeah.
Let me ask you guys this. Primetime wrestling, where Gorilla and Bobby would sit there and record 2 hours of tape matches from the syndicated shows. A lot of that seems off the cuff, because I watched, and you could see so many times where Gorilla seems completely caught off guard by something Bobby says. Is that authentic, or is that heavily produced?
I was there for a lot of it. And you know, they would just do, you know, their cut-ins one after another, you know, and then they would put the matches in, you know, in post-production. No, they didn't rehearse anything. No. They were just that good. I don't think there is a producer today, and as Bill alluded to, even Vince was smart enough to know, as great a talent as Bobby is, you can't produce him. I was at, you know, we used to do it at Video One right outside of Baltimore. And they didn't rehearse anything. I mean, just like the Christmas card interview with me, stuff would just pop into Bobby's head and he would just throw it out to Gorilla. But Gorilla was so talented, he could play right off it. But no, that was
not perfect. It was perfect together, back and forth. They were able to ad lib with each other and keep on topic as well.
The other interview I really remember, and I know Bobby cooked this one up, because this is when, you know, Nick was going around the horn with Vern. And, you know, the big deal was Bobby was always contended that Nick's sleeper hold was just that Vern's sleeper hold was a choke hold. It was illegal. The Bockwinkle sleeper was perfectly legal. You could breathe, but it just cut off the blood to the carotid artery, and that's where you passed out. So that was kind of the big storyline. And, of course, you know, the fans, because Bobby and Nick being a heel, you know, didn't believe it. So we're doing interviews, we take a break and we come back, and I'm starting to do another interview with Nick and Bobby. And I'd worked with Bobby enough. He had, you know, like Bruce sometimes get a little gleam in his eye. So I was immediately kind of on alert, like, okay, well, you know, what's coming? And we're doing this, and Bobby's complaining about it being a choke and everything else. And Bobby says, here, in fact, you know what, give me the mic for a second. So now I'm really, you know, it's like, that's the last thing as an interview you want to do is give up control of the mic. So Bobby takes it. Nick, go ahead and show him the difference about what's legal and what's illegal about Gagnon's sleep. So Nick, you know, grabs me and puts me and starts choking me like Vernon, you know, lifts me up. And he said, you couldn't breathe, right? And I said, no, absolutely not. I'm kind of coughing. And then Bobby says, all right, now show him the Bockwinkle sleeper where he can breathe, but it's a carotid artery. And we're going to put him. And Nick clamps it on. And I mean, he's got it on where I'm struck. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm literally starting to pass out.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, Nick, you know, lets up and literally steadies me. I mean, you know, for real, I was starting to go. And I'm looking at Bobby, and he's got this grin on his face where this is one he had cooked up. And in fact, somebody sent me a screenshot on Facebook, on social media, and you can see Nick with a sleeper, Bobby holding the mic, and Bobby's just got this great big grin on his face.
Oh, boy. We got to find that. We got to find that.
That echoes in the
video.
File with the Coco Beware.
Yes. Yes. All right. Ken, I want to ask you one more thing. And then on the other side of the break, I want to talk about Bobby leaving the AWA to the WWF and what the thoughts were. And then we'll wrap it up and talk about next week. Cause I think we have a pretty special show lined up for next week. Did you want to get something in before the break, Ken?
Yeah, I want to just shed a little bit more light on what kind of person Bobby was away from the business, but always Bobby Heenan pulling a rib. I was out in Las Vegas for the NAPTI show. And I think this is when I was doing the AWF, you know, with Sarge and Tito and the late Paul Alperstein. I was staying at Treasure Island. I go down to the lobby and all of a sudden I hear somebody yelling my name and I turn around, it's Bobby. Now, I hadn't seen Bobby for, you know, a couple of years, comes up, gives me a hug. How you doing? You know, I talking about this and that. And he had met her a couple of times and he said, hey, how's your mom doing? And, you know, I said, she's doing great. And I kind of told him the story. My father had passed away years and years before, that she had got set up to meet someone she dated, you know, before World War II. You know, her kind of first real boyfriend. You know, he went away to the, you know, and it was in World War II. They had completely lost touch. And someone got them together. He had lost his first wife and they just fell, you know, back in love. And I said, they're so happy, you know, and they moved in together. And Bobby says, they're living together? I said, yeah, he's great. I mean, I'm closer to him than I was my father. And, you know, this was before cell phones yet. So Bobby says, come on, come on. He goes out of the bank of pay phones. He puts in his card. He says, what's her number? So I give him the number and, you know, Bobby calls her and she answers the phone and he goes, this is Mrs. Resnick. And yes. And I forget who he said he was. We understand you are living in sin, cohabitating, setting an example for your unmarried son. What kind of mother? And my mom kind of went a panic. He says, no, 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 stop, stop. He said, it's me. It's Bobby Heenan. He said, I ran into Kenny, told him his story. I'm so happy for you. It's great. But it was like, that was Bobby. He wanted to call her up, tell her how happy he was for her. But at the same time, he had to be the jokester. You know, he had to.
Wonderful. That's a great story.
He thought about, you know, he wanted to ask about her when he found out. He was so happy. He wanted to call and tell her. But as he's calling, he's going, well, I can't just be nice. I got to be Bobby Heenan here for a little bit. Oh, so that's, you know, the love that Bobby really had for people.
That's awesome.
A great story.
Yeah. That's amazing. He's an amazing person. And I'm so sad that I didn't get to see the real Bobby. I just got to see
In fact, you know, when we talk about Bobby and so many of the people just remember him as a broadcaster, and this is a true story, Bobby was a phenomenal worker. Yes. And this was in the AWA. I was at ringside calling the match. I forget who Bobby was working with. But Bobby, you know, got tossed out onto the floor, you know, after supposedly taking a pretty good beating. And he was out on the floor selling it so well. I kind of looked over at him. I wasn't sure if maybe he was really hurt. And Bobby happened to see the concern in my eye. And, you know, this is a kayfabe era. And Bobby kind of, you know, just kind of goes, where's Erkin? And then rolls away. Wanted to let me know he was okay. But, you know, even knowing the business, sitting at ringside, that's how good a worker Bobby was, because I thought he might really be seriously hurt. And he saw the concern and he wanted to make sure I knew he was okay. So he kind of, where's Erkin? And rolled, you know, and rolled over back in pain. But that's the one thing. He doesn't get the credit because he was so good as a manager and talker and broadcaster. You know, he didn't really wrestle as much anymore, but he was a fabulous worker.
He was also, you know, the Bobby Heenan character, the Joker character, actually in the latter years of his life, that became Bobby Heenan. It kind of took over his personality completely. You know, he evolved from a heel, from a bad guy, to someone who became a real personality.
But even, you know, in failing health, Bobby was, you know, old school 70s and 80s, where the fans were the lifeblood. There wasn't the pay-per-views, there wasn't the television revenue, but towards even in failing health, Bobby always wanted to show his appreciation and be out and see the fans. He was old school that way. And I think where today there's so much less of that, because the truth is, you know, today's superstar, ticket sales are really the least part of their personal revenue from the business.
Correct. And at the conventions, the lines for Bobby Heenan, the last few years of his life, the lines were, like they'd say, around the corner.
Yeah. Yep. And Jimmy was the same way too. I mean, I've worked so much with Jimmy Hart, even at a telecom convention. I've had Jimmy Hart out because he's such an iconic figure, and all of the other vendors, all of the other telecom companies were complaining because our line for Jimmy Hart, who, by the way, has nothing to do with telecom, were taking up the entire aisle of the trade show. And it just shows you how much of an impact that that era of professional wrestling had on people, because it was about the people.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely.
And back then, they believed it.
Yep.
Absolutely.
It's still real to me.
Yeah, that's a world famous video.
Do you know, but hold on just for one sec, that world famous video. Do you know I'm the host of that video?
I didn't know that.
That was taped in Charlotte, North Carolina, in an independent show. I was in the ring with, I believe it was Jim Cornette in the Midnight Express, doing a Q&A, and I pointed to that guy, and that's where that came from. And I was shocked to see that clip on the Jimmy Kimmel show.
Yeah.
That he thought was funny, and I saw myself in the ring there. Yeah. You didn't know that.
Was that was that legit? Was that guy?
Yeah, it was totally legit.
It was really
totally legit. It was not planned or anything. He was very, that crowd that was at that particular show that I believe that Tony Hunter ran was wrestling fans, true wrestling fans, back in a small arena in the Carolinas. And we all believed back then.
Awesome. All right. We're 10 minutes late for a break or something like that. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side and we'll wrap up the Bobby Heenan Show, Wrestling with History, worldwide in the VOC Nation Wrestling Network. VOC Nation takes wrestling fans behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history. Get stories and inside information from people who worked on the other side of the curtain. Follow the VOC Nation Wrestling Network podcast feed and get weekly shows from hosts like Bill After, The Raging Bull Manny Fernandez, Ken Resnick, The Maestro, Shelly Martinez, Wes Briscoe, and more. Visit VOCNation.com for more information and follow us on Twitter at VOCNation. Back here on Wrestling with History worldwide in the VOC Nation Wrestling Network. Make sure you go to VOCNation.com and check out all of our free content. So there's lots of great stars on the VOC Nation Network that take you behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history. Besides Bill After and Ken Resnick, you got Pro Wrestling Illustrated's Brady Hicks, former WCW star, The Maestro, the second generation star, Wes Briscoe. Oh boy, I mess this up every week. Shelly Martinez, who was Ariel in WWE and Salinas in TNA, and a whole host of others. Go to VOC Nation.
Manny Fernandez.
Oh my Lord. How can I forget our most popular and polarizing figure, the Raging Bull, Manny Fernandez, Rookie of the Month. Just killing it with numbers. And he's got a t-shirt coming to the pro. It's actually there on sale at the VOCNation.com pro wrestling tee store. So just go to shirts.VOCNation.com. Get your shirt, support Manny. He loves the business. And oh, there you go. Ken, if you're watching on video,
you're talking about shirts.
Ken is modeling his Killer Ken Made It Real shirt. And that is available as well. shirts.vocnation.com or search VOC Nation at Pro Wrestling Tees. Bill's hat is not available quite yet.
Not yet.
Hey, can we do a shameless tease? It's not available quite yet, but there is a great new VOC Nation t-shirt coming.
Yeah. Which it's actually there. It's there on the pro wrestling tees. The new logo, new color, and a very smooth shirt. So you'll love it. Much, much nicer than these old shirts were.
Well, you know what I want to ask you? Somebody asked me this the other day.
What's that?
And about our show and all the VOC Nation, Wrestling Nation shows. Is if somebody wants to advertise on the VOC Nation, how do they do that?
You can simply contact admin@vocnation.com. We have a very attractive clicks per CPM, clicks per million or something like that. It's actually per thousand is how it's charged. And it's based on the average traffic on the feed. And by the way, the cool thing about advertising with VOC Nation or just simply listening to our shows, it's very simple with the feed. We don't do what some other networks do and give you a separate RSS feed for all of our shows. One feed. So just search VOC Nation Wrestling Network on your favorite app, bookmark it, like it, subscribe. People hate that word because it implies a fee, but this is free. And it's one feed for everything. So when you advertise, you get your advertisement across all of our shows. So this show, Wrestling with History, and The Room with Brady and Stroh, Shelley, all that stuff, Wes Briscoe, your ad goes
Manny everywhere. Fernandez.
and one thing for sure, you'll never offend Bruce with cash.
Never, never, never.
So that's what is it? ADMIN, admin, like administrator.
At vocnation.com. If you can't spell admin, just my name, Bruce at vocnation.com. And we'll get you a good deal. We'll take care of you, especially if you say you're Bill's friend.
I may advertise my book, Is Wrestling Fixed?
I didn't know it was broken.
Thank you. Back to you, Bruce.
Next week, coming up on Wrestling with History, we're going to talk about the late, great Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Oh, I can't wait for that. Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Piper, right here on Wrestling with History. And both of you guys had some great stories with Piper. So I'm very excited about that. I've been waiting for that.
One of the great movie lines of all time.
Yes. Yes. From They Live. Give it
to us. Remind me to tell you the story about Roddy Piper and Skandor Akbar in Texas.
I can't wait.
Okay.
Roddy's great line in that movie. And since, we're podcasting, he goes, I'm here for two things, to chew gum and kick ass, and I'm all out of gum.
Yep. Yep.
That's a great line.
Awesome. Awesome. And one of the best movies of all time, They Live. Yeah. All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up here on Bobby Heenan Week on Wrestling with History. Bobby, just a storied career, but Ken, I want to ask you, he had a great run in the AWA. He was there for, about maybe 10 years or so? So he started in 69 and was there until 84. So that's 15 years in the AWA. What was Vern's reaction when Bobby said, I'm heading east to New York?
I wasn't there, but I got the impression that when Bobby left, that's when Vern really began to realize he was in trouble.
Yeah.
I think Hulk leaving, Bobby really rose to greatness. WA and he and Nick had been there so long, Nick and Bobby and Wally were along with Jack Lanza, kind of booking the territory with Greg. And I think when Vern realized that someone as loyal as Bobby was leaving, and there was no way he could come close financially to keeping him, I think that's when the realization set in that, he was in trouble. And I think that spurred the Pro Wrestling USA, that suddenly Vern realized he was, to survive. The other promoters had it to get together. It was still too territorial in terms of everybody wanting their talent to go over. But I think, you know, Bobby was like, it finally hit home where the writing was kind of forming on the wall.
Yeah. Yeah. He was so loyal to that company. I agree with you that things started falling apart in Vern's mind once the loyal people started to leave.
And even that aside, you could argue, as Bruce, you alluded to, even in the AWA, that the stable that you know Bobby had and still was tied in to the weasel suit matches with Greg, you know, with Nick, the war, you know, with Ray Stevens. I mean, it was, you could almost argue that in terms of on-air talent, Bobby was the most valuable. Yeah. So the loyalty aside, you know, whenever Bobby went somewhere, he was a huge draw. People loved to hate Bobby Heenan, and Bobby was able to work a crowd. I mean, Bobby could sometimes just, you know, fans would be chanting something. All Bobby had to do was just turn around, not say a word, just acknowledge it. And the fans would, you know, explode even louder. Yeah. So not only are you losing a guy you probably never thought you would lose, you're losing arguably one of the most valuable properties of the territory.
You know what I would have loved to have seen? Our main event next week, Roddy Piper in an interview battle with Bobby Heenan. I don't think that ever happened.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't that have been tremendous?
I mean.
Oh, No, they had that. No, Bill, Primetime Wrestling. Remember when Roddy Piper joined the show in 89, Bobby Heenan had that run of the Bobby Heenan show that upset the USA Network.
Oh, yes, right. I'm glad you reminded me of that. I forgot about that.
One of the greatest, kind of segments of all time was that. It was only a couple of weeks because USA, and Bruce Pritchard tells the story on his show, but USA called WWE and said, "What are you doing? You can't do this with the Bobby Heenan show. We're paying for wrestling."
Yeah.
By the way, the Weasel name was started by Dick the Bruiser, who we talked about in the beginning. Yeah. Dick the Bruiser. In the
weasel suit. Yes. So I have an idea. I've got an idea here. For our main event next week, I wonder if fans can send in their favorite Roddy Piper moment or Roddy Piper match that we can discuss next week as well. Time of Roddy Piper.
You can tweet VOC Nation with the hashtag WWH, Wrestling with History, or tweet Resnick after VOC and let us know. Use that hashtag as well, WWH. Or you can tweet Bill at After One Wrestling and use the hashtag WWH. Real quick, before we go, Bobby Heenan jumped in 1984 and I understand the original plan was for him to manage Jesse Ventura for a big run against Hulk Hogan that would, I guess, follow WrestleMania. But instead, when Ventura was out with blood clots in his lungs, they put him with Big John Studd against Andre, and the rest is history. Bill, is that how you understood it?
I knew that Heenan was going to be brought in to manage somebody, but they had their eyes on him as a commentator even way back then.
Ken, did you understand Bobby to go and work with Jesse or to be going to work with Jesse?
I didn't hear anything about that, you know, one way or the other. The only thing I want to add is we sign off, for those that don't know, if you go on YouTube, you can find the Weasel match Bobby had with Greg Gagne when Greg put him in the sleeper, put him out, and then they put the weasel suit on and Bobby came out of it, was laying there, and then realized he had the weasel suit. What, as great a worker of in-ring talent, but as cowardice and showing he was afraid, he was scared. Bobby was just, he was great at everything he did relating to the business. But the weasel suit matches were some of the greatest with Greg Gagne.
Going back to your question about Ventura, it would have been a natural thing because Bobby was in the Ventura was in the AWA, so that would have been a natural combination. I would have liked to have seen that.
And Ventura, so we'll get to Jesse at some point in the future. Ventura was number two on our poll after Bobby Heenan, so we'll get to Jesse, but we do want to do Roddy Piper, and we got some other great stuff planned for you as well. Bill, final thoughts on Bobby Heenan.
The world lost an incredible performer in Bobby Heenan. He could turn a crowd like no one else could. And when you talk about the old school wrestling managers, there was nobody like Bobby Heenan. There was, it's the old cliche, there were, you know, many imitations, but the original one, nobody could truthfully imitate Bobby Heenan. He was just
often imitated, but never duplicated.
Yeah.
My buddy Jimmy Hart might have come close. We'll have to talk about Jimmy one of these days too.
Baby, we'll do that, baby. Yeah, but Bobby Heenan was one of a kind.
One of a kind. Yeah. Ken, any final thoughts? I think you gave it to me before, right before I went to Bill.
Yeah, I mean, Bobby, you know, Jimmy Hart was great there. And I've been so lucky in my time to work with so many great managers. But no one comes close to the ring ability, the ability on interviews, on commentary. And I think we've talked about it once before. The one thing I always marveled about Bobby that sometimes people didn't realize, whatever interview he was doing about an upcoming match, somewhere in the interview, as much as he tried to downplay it, he always made certain to build up whoever the opponent was going to be. He always, always did that. And that's something you don't see today. And I think that just points to not only his ability, but the tremendous respect he had for everything about the business.
Absolutely. That's perfect, Ken. That really is.
And that's a perfect way to wrap it up.
And by the way, Bruce, I love Jimmy Hart and he's a fabulous manager. One of the things that separated Bobby from most of the other managers, if you really look at it, was he was able to get in the ring and take bumps, like in an entire match if he had to, because he had a wrestling background.
Right.
Lou Albano had a wrestling background. The Grand Wizard never had one. I don't believe Jimmy had one, but Jimmy's always been like in the top tier of all the great managers in history. And he's still...
Freddie had one. Fuji had one.
Yeah.
A lot of managers were great wrestlers.
Yeah, but Bobby was just...
cut above.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. All right. That'll do it for this week. A great, great episode on Bobby the Brain Heenan. Make sure you rate and review us on iTunes because that helps us out a lot. Remember, if you want to advertise across this or any of the VOC Nation shows, all of the VOC Nation shows, just send an email to admin@vocnation.com. We'll get you a great deal. And our premium channel, which includes full video of our major shows, commercial-free episodes, audio and video. And then you have access in the mid-tier to Apter's Archives for just $9 a month. The basic tier is just $3, and you get commercial-free stuff and full video. You can't beat it. Can't beat it.
But well, I'm going to subscribe as soon as we get off here. I got my...
Make sure you do it.
I got my Venmo right here.
Do it before the price goes up. I mean, come on, get in. All right, for Killer Ken Resnick, wonderful Willie Bill Apter, I'm the voice of choice, Bruce Ford. Send us out, guys.
We'll see you eventually at the matches.
That's all, folks.
Yeah, I like that. That was good.
Bill Apter has been in the pro wrestling business for over 50 years.
Hey, talking here with Arn Anderson. Arn, first of all, your height and weight.
6'1", 255.
And now subscribers to VOC Nation Premium get exclusive access to Bill Apter's archived audio footage.
And where's your hometown?
Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay, and give us something about your back. First of all, your relationship to Ole Anderson.
Ole is my...
Subscription to VOC Nation Premium starts at just $3 a month. and includes commercial-free audio and video versions of our top podcasts.
Okay, we're speaking here with the manager of the World Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, Tarzan Tyler and Luke Ram, and he's sort of glowing tonight about a new prospect we haven't heard of yet.
And for just $9 a month, Apter's archives are all yours.
Would you tell us who this new prospect
is?
Well,
I'll tell you, Bill, I've searched the world, and I finally found the true world champion. I finally found...
What's your opinion of Ivan Koloff winning the title from Bruno Sammartino?
Well, I think... I don't know what to say, but I want to say one thing. Bruno was a hell of a champion.
Hear exclusive interviews with the greatest performers of all time.
This is Bill Apter, and once again, we're speaking here with... Bruno Sammartino. Bruno, first of all, how did you and Bruiser lose that title to the Valiants?
Well, actually, it was a very unusual loss, if you want to call it a
did
loss.
Did he didn't have anything to do with it?
Well, yes, but the whole thing is this. The rules, as I always understood them, was that the title could only be lost by pin or submission, which is the same rules as my title, the World Wrestling Federation. That night, it was...
To sign up, it's very simple. Head to premium.vocnation.com or go to patreon.com/vocnation. VOC Nation takes you behind the scenes of the greatest moments in pro wrestling history.